This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hello, I'm Glenn Pugh for AvWeb.com. On June 1, 2009, an airliner flying at 35,000 feet disappeared into the Atlantic, taking with it the lives of all 228 people aboard. Three highly trained, experienced pilots were in the cockpit as the jet came down. The details are intricate and some are yet to be disclosed, but others are clear. Three pilots with roughly 20,000 hours of flying experience between them were paired with a modern, highly computerized aircraft. They faced a problem while cruising at 35,000 feet, and less than 5 minutes later, everyone on board was dead. The catch is this: had the pilots reacted by doing almost nothing, it might be possible the aircraft would have stayed aloft, but that oversimplifies things. To better understand the dynamics of flight deck working on a long overseas flight, we're speaking today with professional airline pilot Jason Goldberg. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Glenn.
Jason's a professional airline pilot with more than 15,000 hours of flight experience. He's flown as engineer, co-pilot, or captain on five different and widely used commercial airliners, and he has extensive experience flying long-haul overseas flights. Jason, what's the atmosphere on the flight deck 4 hours into a long-haul overseas flight at night?
Well, clearly, Glenn, there are challenges right off the bat related to alertness. When you're flying outside your normal period of alertness or wakefulness, as you would be doing on a flight like this, pilots, professional pilots, are conditioned to really maintain a level of alertness by constantly being aware of the fact that that this is a challenge. So I think that at this point during the flight, the pilots are maintaining a conscious alertness, making sure that they are paying close attention to compensate for what is the reality of biology and physics, that during this period of time, a human is designed to be asleep. So I think what you're looking at is a group of pilots who are very mindful of the challenges and are focused on being aware.
Are there any special considerations you have to keep in mind? Especially while flying toward a line of thunderstorms at 35,000 feet in a loaded airliner over the ocean at night, or is that fairly routine?
Well, Glenn, it's routine in the sense that it's something that we deal with all the time as professional pilots, particularly during summer months, but all year round. You know, weather is a factor. It's extremely common during a long transoceanic flight to deal with one or even more lines of weather. So it is fairly routine, but it's not routine in the sense of what's at stake, because the destructive power of a thunderstorm is formidable. We're very respectful of thunderstorms. Because a thunderstorm is a line of thunderstorms, is a very dynamic environment. We're consciously and constantly trying to figure out the best way to make our way safely in between a series of cells. It involves deviation. It involves coordination with the relevant air traffic control agencies. Because, you know, frankly, flying too close to a line of thunderstorms the implications of that can range anywhere from uncomfortable for the passengers to downright dangerous and deadly. So it, clearly, while it's something that we deal with on a regular basis, it's nothing that that isn't pretty serious with significant consequences if done incorrectly.
Now, another factor here might be something of the interpersonal sort. How important is crew hierarchy as it relates to pilot experience versus pilot assignment in the cockpit?
Well, it is a very, very important part of the airline pilot world. The pilot in command is the pilot in command, regardless of his relative experience, number of hours in the aircraft, and so on and so forth. You have a very interesting situation here, however, when you have a long-haul flight where the flight time is over a certain number of hours. Of course, that number of hours varies based on country. In the United States, it's 8 hours. When you have a flight in duration longer than that 8 hours, you have an augmented crew in order to comply with the FAA regulations. So what you basically have is three pilots who are captain qualified to act as pilot in command. There's usually a system of rotating breaks where a pilot will go back into the cabin in order to take his FAA-mandated break period and be legal for the flight. So during that period of time, there is actually a pilot in command designated up in the cockpit who may not be the actual captain at the time. Of course, it's physically impossible for the captain to be the pilot in command when he's in the back taking his break. and then the crew member who is designated as a pilot in command takes that responsibility. But there is a very strict hierarchy. It's drummed into the airline pilot brain from new hire school onward. And generally, whereas a pilot with less experience, who might be a captain, is in command, equally, it's drummed into that pilot's head that if he is a less experienced pilot in terms of times and type, he will be very free to ask for and accept advice from the other pilots who may be positioned as co-pilots but may have more experience either in that aircraft or in the environment in which the trip is being conducted.
Now, tell me about the automated systems and how a pilot interacts with them on a flight like this, a long-haul overnight flight.
Well, what I always tell people, Glenn, when this question comes up is that the mantra of computer programming is very viable in this scenario, and everybody has heard the phrase garbage in, garbage out. So you have a tremendous amount of automation. You have some form of flight control computer, which can be programmed with the route, which can literally get the airplane from point A to point B. Typically, the autopilot is used as cruise to reduce fatigue and to allow the pilot to be more of a systems manager. But at the same time, there's nothing in that computer and there's nothing in the automated systems generally that the pilot doesn't put there in terms of navigation. Now, this becomes a little more of a tricky situation when it comes to automation related to protecting the airplane. And that's more of a design philosophy. Some manufacturers tend to put the onus on the pilot as the final decision maker, and the aircraft is designed to allow the pilot to override any potential safeties or warnings, basically with the design philosophy that the pilot should be able to recognize any systems malfunctions with the safeguards on the aircraft and should be the decision maker to intervene properly. Other manufacturers have a different theory that the engineers who design the airplane are essentially smarter than anyone who could be operating it, and the airplane is actually able to override pilot inputs if it detects what it considers to be an unsafe condition.
So how would you describe the role of the pilots with reference to the aircraft's automated systems in normal circumstances? You mentioned the term information managers.
I think that's a fair way to put it, Glenn. In normal situations, the pilot's job is to make sure that the automation is doing what it's intended to do. So the automation is merely a tool to reduce fatigue and to allow the pilots to concentrate on the big picture. So when I say systems manager, what the pilots really do is they're monitoring and making sure that all the automation in the airplane, flight management computer, et cetera, is doing what it's intended to do to complete the flight as intended.
Now, when you throw a line of thunderstorms into the mix, how does that change the dynamics on the flight deck? Are there different priorities or just more priorities?
Well, the priority then becomes the safe and timely avoidance of the immediate threat, which is the weather. And now the pilot has to, or the pilots have to start using their experience and their brains to figure out first and foremost, how do we find our way safely around the line of weather? And the secondary priority becomes, how do we get to where we're going, quickly and as economically as possible. But when you're confronted with something like a line of thunderstorms, which is, an immediate safety threat, that becomes your number one focus. Now, in the case of running into a scenario like this at night, where you're not able to put eyeballs on the line of weather, now the difficulty increases because now you have to be able to use the radar extremely precisely in order to try to ascertain exactly where the weather is, exactly where the best place to penetrate the weather is. So in a nighttime situation, the difficulty of pulling this off multiplies.
I'd imagine that a flight, a normal overseas flight that's been aloft for 4 hours, perhaps preceded by several months or maybe even years of what's become normalcy along that route, in your estimation, is there a pattern of routine that could degrade a pilot's abilities, or do you feel that there are safeguards against that?
It's hard to say, Glenn. I can't put myself in the position of a particular scenario, but I will say that at our airline and at almost every airline that I've been exposed to, the threat of complacency is real, it's recognized, and it's trained against. We are constantly reminded in training, and we constantly remind ourselves that complacency, as, like you speak of, is one of the big enemies of safety. And whereas it's theoretically possible, and it's human nature to become complacent with a situation, as professional airline pilots, we are very, very cognizant of the threat implicit in being overly complacent.
I'm going to get very specific in introducing 447 directly into our conversation. It suffered a loss of valid airspeed data, is what they found so far, while flying at 35,000 feet over the ocean at night. As a pilot, what does that mean to you?
Well, not being intimately familiar with the systems of the aircraft in question, I can speak generally. Aircraft airspeed information is one of the most important indications that we can get. First of all, in almost every modern airliner, there are multiple inputs designed to avoid giving us an erroneous picture of aircraft airspeed. Typically, a number of systems are tied to airspeed indication. So if you have some form of airspeed indication failure, you can generally expect other warnings, other cautions, which may be anything from distracting to dangerous because they're giving you as a pilot messages which are incorrect. And as pilots, we're trained to accomplish procedures based on a series of emergencies or abnormal situations, almost like a flow chart. If this occurs, you then do this. And these processes are both memorized in some cases, and in other cases, they are written down on paper in checklist form. But when you have a loss of airspeed indication, typically the scenario involves numerous warnings and faults, often providing the pilots with conflicting information on what to do. So it's definitely one of the more insidious and difficult emergency situations, short of fire or smoke, that I could imagine, particularly in a scenario where it's dark, you're over the water, and you don't have a visual reference. It's almost a worst-case scenario for this particular type of abnormal.
Well, let's venture for a second well beyond what we know. I want you, if you would, to imagine yourself inside the cockpit. Explain to me what's going on. I don't want you to fix the problem because they didn't fix the problem. I want you to go down with the jet, and I want you to try to help us understand why.
I would say first, right off the bat, for your listeners, it's important to realize that a transport category jet, while it is an airplane and flies on the same basic principles that a small general aviation airplane does, it's a very, very different animal. An extremely complicated series of systems are attached to that airplane. And all those systems are monitored by multiple levels of sensors and automation. So let's keep that in mind from the beginning as we talk about this scenario. So we're sitting in our cockpit, and all is well, and we're making our routine checks. And perhaps all of a sudden, we get a yellow light and a ding designed to get our attention. And then maybe we get another one. And then we get a red light and a series of loud clacks and a continuous bell. What I want you to understand, what I want your listeners to understand, is this goes from a very calm to an extraordinarily chaotic situation almost immediately. Now, as professional airline pilots, we are trained from very early on in our careers, and it's a self-selecting business, as you well know, meaning that if you can't process this kind of training, you frankly don't last in the business. We are trained to immediately focus and try to detect exactly what the problem is in a very calm, deliberate way. But now we have multiple failures accompanied by multiple lights, numerous sounds, and requires, in many cases, a relatively quick action in order to determine exactly what is wrong. So in this case, we might be looking at our airspeed indicator and either see a rapid, immediate, either increase or decrease in airspeed. Now, from the time that we're private pilots or military pilots, we're taught that airspeed is life. And of course, this applies especially in a large transport category jet, heavily loaded, high up in terms of its performance range. So perhaps the pilots immediately focus on the airspeed problem. Typically, because they depend on airspeed inputs, the autopilot and the autothrottle either would disconnect or the pilots would disconnect it in order to avoid inputs that would be dangerous to the airplane. The pilots start to work the problem as they see it. They try to determine exactly what is at the base of this series of multiple failures. Perhaps the airspeed continues to increase. Perhaps the pilots pitch the airplane up, reduce thrust in an effort to try to avoid an overspeed. Perhaps the airspeed continues to decrease and they push the nose down and they add power, thinking that the aircraft is going to stall. It's very conceivable that something like a stick shaker or a stick pusher designed to prevent the airplane from stalling would come into play, and the pilots have to overcome those stick forces. I've heard anecdotally that at some point during this particular scenario, the computers on this particular aircraft determined that the airspeed data was unreliable and turned off the stall warnings. Well, to a pilot, you're no longer getting any stall warnings, and in a transport category jet, you may not get immediate physical input of an impending stall until that airplane's in a full stall. So you can only imagine the kind of chaos that probably was taking place in the cockpit of this airliner as it plummeted towards the ocean. And based on my experience and knowing pilots as I do and having been a professional pilot as long as I have, that those pilots were working that problem as they saw it all the way until impact, all the way down to the very end.
Looking forward, people have been talking about training and automated systems, especially with respect to the loss of Air France 447, how pilots interact with machines. They call it human factors. But aircraft have lost airspeed data before automation was king, and they've gone down too. If I could ask you to look into your crystal ball, how do we fix this? Or is this a case where we throw up our hands and say sometimes bad things happen?
Well, you're right, Glenn, you know, that this has been one of the more deadly scenarios throughout the course of aviation history. And you're also right that this has been deadly long before widespread automation came to the industry. We all remember the case of 727 in upstate New York, one of the least automated transport category jets during the jet age, and that aircraft losing all hands due to a poor airspeed indication. And I can't point my finger at an answer, but I think the best solution is to realize that as airline pilots, whatever the level of automation, we have to understand the threat, train for the threat, during our simulator periods. So God forbid if something like this occurs, there's some recognition which hopefully would lead to a safe result. So we can't throw up our hands. I don't know that there's a fix to this. I don't know that it's necessarily an issue of automation versus lack of automation. So as a professional airline pilot, my perspective is increased training, increased focus on this particular threat, and try to take whatever unfortunate lessons we can from this disaster.
We've been speaking with professional airline pilot Jason Goldberg. I'm Glenn Pugh for avweb.com. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.